Welcome to The Third Mind, a podcast that examines the world of supervision in transactional analysis psychotherapy. I am Aruna Gopakumar, a provisional teaching and supervising transactional analyst. In each episode of The Third Mind, we present a supervision session, a dialogue between a therapist and a supervisor, where the therapist reflects on their lived experience with the client. Therapists talk about their questions, stuckness, mistakes, and ethical dilemmas, and think together with me about them. Each session is followed by a discussion with other psychotherapy trainees to apply theory to practice. The clients presented here are fictitious, though the challenges of the practitioners are real. I have created this in collaboration with my trainees who have enacted the roles of the supervisees to bring these challenges alive.
Welcome to episode 1, when a third enters the therapeutic relationship.
Hi, Amrita.
Hi, Aruna. Hi.
Yes, Amrita. What would you like from your supervision today?
I'm wondering about an action on my part and whether it was appropriate.
When you say appropriate, what do you mean?
I'm wondering if I negatively impacted the client.
Okay, so you want to think about whether there was possibility of harm?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'd like to think about that. And perhaps I also want to think about any alternate responses in the situation.
Okay, so you want to think about whether there's possibility for harm and what else you could have done.
Yeah.
So what's that action? What's the action that you want to review?
Could I give you some context, Aruna?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. So my client, we'll call him Rahul for now. He's 21 years old. He's doing his master's. He lives with his parents and he doesn't really have an income of his own. And he decided to take up therapy to deal with his mood swings. But his parents are the ones that pay for therapy. I've been working with him for 16 sessions now. He was facing immense challenges regulating his mood. He had periods of intense depressed moods that would last like several days. Given his symptoms, which include a tendency for self-harm, I had asked him to obtain an independent evaluation from a psychiatrist. And he happened to share this ask of mine with his parents because they're the ones that pay for therapy. And they asked to have a conversation with me. And they actually made the request through him.
So did you have any contact with them earlier?
No, actually none at all, except that I knew that the therapy fees came from his father's account.
Okay, so the money came from their account, but no contact with them.
Yeah.
So what happened then when they asked you to meet?
I actually spoke to Rahul and I contracted with him for what information I could share with them. And then I had a conversation with his parents.
And how did that go?
It actually felt like a test to me. And it was a test that I didn't pass, I feel. His parents expressed displeasure at me being his therapist.
Yeah, how did they communicate that?
Well, they had asked me about my qualifications, who I was in training with, and how long I'd been in training, and what approach I used in therapy and all. And yeah, to me, the ulterior was like, why isn't it working already? And are you good enough? They also made statements like, is he so ill that he needs to go to a psychiatrist? You know?
Yeah. Again, the ulterior was, are you good enough?
Yeah.
I know we have to get to the action that you want to review, but I'm curious, how did you respond?
I felt very defensive. Like, I could see that I answered all their questions factually, telling them that I was in training, supervision, and personal therapy. But I did have to work hard to keep my composure. Yeah.
Okay. I can see the pressure on you to prove that you were good enough.
Yeah, it was tough. But what I actually want to review with you is what I said to him after the meeting with his parents. I think I feel most embarrassed about this conversation that I had with Rahul post the meeting. And that was actually the action that I wanted to review.
Okay, go ahead. Tell me, what was that action?
Yeah, my words were along the lines of, your parents aren't comfortable with me, and that's okay with me. My concern is where you are. Are you finding our work helpful? Do you agree with them? This is what I asked him.
Mm-hmm. And what are you feeling embarrassed about?
I think my phrase, do you agree with them? Yeah, I feel like it was a very clear invitation for him to reassure me.
Oh. So do you believe that it was an invitation for him to reassure you?
I wonder, I mean, I'm not sure. I can tell you how he responded though. He said he was angry with them for not trusting him. He had actually searched for a few therapists before deciding on me. He said that while they pay for therapy, they didn't really believe in it. He said they didn't understand that therapy takes time and they wanted results quickly. Yeah, he also said that he was happy with our work and he felt understood by me. He didn't really want their doubt to influence us.
So what do you think? Was your question what I would call a symbiotic invitation for him to reassure you?
Yeah, maybe it was. Yeah.
And what's your data?
He said he was happy with me.
He also said other things. Could he have been an adult?
Yeah, he could.
And what's your data for that? For instance, when he said he was happy with you, could that have been from his adult? How would you know?
It could have been from his adult because he sounded calm. He shared his reasoning with me and I experienced his response as congruent, Aruna. And, you know, therapy is his own initiative. And he has his own reasons for being angry with them as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so you presented reasoning for both, yeah? That he was not an adult and was an adult. So if you put both together, what's your conclusion?
I feel I need reassurance, and I had become very nervous after the meeting. But when I think about his response now, I actually feel better. Maybe he didn't take the invitation and responded to me as an adult.
Good awareness of your unconscious process. Yeah. So you needed reassurance. You were aware of your anxiety and you may have communicated to him that you were anxious, inviting him to take care of you.
Yeah.
So what would you do differently?
I might just ask him how things were after the meeting. I mean, he is an adult. He would bring up challenges, if any.
That's great. Yeah.
But
you were anxious. What about that? How would you manage that?
I need to manage that on my own without him.
That's really good awareness, because that's important from an ethics perspective. It's not the client's responsibility to help manage a therapist's anxiety. Okay, so you wanted to think about the potential for harm in this action, isn't it?
Yeah.
What do you see as the potential for harm?
Like, he is the client. His job, like you said, is not to reassure me. And in the process, I may be confirming his script, when he has to adapt to my needs, just as he had to attend to his parents.
Yeah. Lovely. That he may be adapting to you and he may be responsible for you, which is already his script pattern.
Yeah.
So I heard you say, that he was an adult. He is an adult. He's 21 years old, isn't it?
Yeah.
How come you agreed to have a conversation with his parents?
When I asked him to meet with the psychiatrist, he said, I'll talk to my mom about it. And I believe he needed to ask them because they were paying for it. And here in India, the parents are involved, which is not always a bad thing.
Who was the contract with?
It's only him.
What about the fact that the money came from the parents' account?
That's between him and them, isn't it?
Is it?
Do you think I was pressured by that?
You need to answer that. Were you?
I think so. Perhaps I agreed to meet with them because I unconsciously felt obligated to them.
Good awareness, yeah? So there might have been some kind of unconscious pressure that came from the fact that they were paying for it.
Yeah.
So their paying impacted you. Do you think it impacted your client as well?
Yeah, I think he felt the need to justify to his parents that he is changing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you can see the pressure.
Yeah.
On the process. I'm also curious, why did he suddenly say that he wanted to talk to his parents? He was making all decisions on his own till then.
Yeah. Because they were paying. Yeah. I mean, I didn't think of that. But he doesn't have an income of his own. How could they not be involved in this process? I'm confused.
So by virtue of their paying, it actually became a three-party contract.
Ah. Yeah, could I have clarified this with them? Could I have possibly made it a two-party contract?
How could you have done that?
What option? I think I could have probably asked him how he was impacted by his parents paying the fee directly to me, and how it could potentially interfere with the therapy at the very beginning. I could clarify with him that the contract was actually between me and him. So, yeah. Even if they were the ones paying, I wanted to check. I should have checked if he was okay with that. And if he was, he needed to make it clear to the parents too. I feel like if I had been clear about that in the beginning, maybe even I would have responded differently. Yeah.
How would you have responded differently?
Right now, like the option of saying no to their request makes me anxious. I'm scared of conflict and I'm not very good at setting boundaries. That would have also played out, I think.
So because conflict is scary for you, you couldn't think of any other option?
Yeah, I really didn't think I had the option to say no.
And what do you think now?
Yeah, I could have invited him to think with me about his reasoning for talking to his mom.
Yeah. So ask him why he wants to suddenly talk to his mom about it, whereas the work has primarily been with you. I'm wondering if there was an unconscious process there.
In asking me to talk to his parents. Yeah, I could process that as well, Aruna. Perhaps he was also scared. Probably he was also not able to say no to me.
Good thinking. Yeah, so that's a parallel.
Yeah.
That he is also scared of conflict and he was adapting to you, who wasn't able to say no, and instead said, let me talk to my parents and why don't you talk to them, etc.
Yeah.
Could you have alerted him to the possibility of harm in bringing the parents in at this stage when you've already worked together for many sessions?
Yeah. At this stage, it feels like they may panic, which they did actually. And they brought in their own processes into the room, and that impacted both me and Rahul.
Yeah. So what's emerging for you as options for you now, with awareness of what was going on really? What could you have done differently?
I should have said no first. But they could have also called me without asking me. But I guess I could have still refused to continue with the call, or maybe just heard them out.
Yeah. Well done. And suppose they called you, even if you had said no, and if they had asked you about your qualifications, etc., how could you have responded?
I don't know. I would have probably given them the same answers, but without being defensive.
Could I offer a suggestion?
Yeah, please.
So what about saying, Rahul has chosen to work with me and our work is confidential. I understand your anxiety, but I'm going to request you to trust his choices.
Oh, Aruna, can I write that down?
Of course.
Yeah. I just feel so embarrassed about the whole thing.
Relax. It's okay. You've been courageous enough to bring it for supervision, which is a very ethical thing to do. It's okay to be vulnerable and make mistakes, and we all learn from our experiences. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes, go ahead.
Yeah, I think from our conversation, I would like to recognize the impact of third party much more clearly and contract better.
Absolutely.
Yeah. I want to examine my own discomfort with setting clear boundaries and saying no. I recognized a game invitation and I stepped in as a rescuer. And that is work that I need to do in personal therapy.
Wonderful. You recognized your own unconscious process and you have a way of attending to it. Well done, Amrita.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you.
Let's get to reflections on theory.
Hi, Raj and Nikki. Welcome to this conversation where we review the supervision that I just did with Amrita.
Hey, hello.
Hello.
So yeah, let's start with what idea stands out for you in this supervision?
Three-party contracts.
So I'm still not sure whether it's a two-cornered or a three-party contract.
It's two-party because the contract was only between the therapist and the client.
Yes, but the third party was involved in paying, right?
Yeah. I see the confusion. And one way to clarify it is to clarify the contract. And one of the central features of a contract is that it is explicit. When expectations are made explicit, they can be clarified or negotiated, and game playing is reduced and all parties are protected.
So when the money comes from another account, there is no discussion around it. The contract is not explicit and there is potential for game playing.
Yeah, and that's the confusion, whether it's two-party or three-party. Yeah. So when the parents paid for therapy, it became what Funita English called a three-cornered contract. And she diagrams it as a triangle with the three corners of the triangle representing the three parties.
So in such situations, what makes that, you know, such three-cornered contracts effective?
So Funita English's idea of three-cornered contracts was further developed by Nellie McColt, who added the idea of psychological distance. So she defined psychological distance as the perceived closeness and clarity in the relationship between parties. So she said if there are three parties, The three-cornered contract is most effective when the triangle is equilateral, which means that each party feels equally close to the other two. In addition, she suggests that the process of contracting be made transparent and explicit. When the contract between the three parties is made explicit and agreed to, what the contract is made explicit and agreed to by all the three parties.
So how would we apply that here? It looks like the psychological distance between the therapist and the client was less, which means they were close, but yeah, the parents seemed far away from both. So it looks like an isosceles triangle. They may not trust the process.
Correct.
So perhaps a good thing would have been maybe to get the parents in a call initially and check what their expectations from the process were and maybe agree on a contract together with all three.
Exactly. So when they are paying, there are implicit expectations. And if they are not attended to, it can sabotage the process. Lovely. So that's one of the key learnings that you both are taking away. Shall we look at other ways in which we can theorize the supervision?
Yes, that'll be good.
I could say that the therapist's belief that parental involvement is good is a contamination. It is a parental value mistaken to be adult content.
Fantastic.
Yeah.
Perhaps the therapist not recognizing that she could have said no. Maybe that's a discount. And maybe it's a discount at the level of stimulus, maybe T1.
Is it?
I'm thinking she's aware of her discomfort and the discomfort was fairly significant. What she was discounting was really the existence of options. So I'm thinking it's possibly T3.
Quite right. Yeah. So it is. Yeah. So she's discounting the fact that she had choices. She's discounting the existence of options. Well done. So shall we look at ego states? When the therapist asks the client, do you agree with them? Which ego state was she likely in?
So she was clearly anxious. So she was most likely in her child ego state and clearly looking for reassurance.
Great. And that's what we call a symbiotic invitation. A symbiotic invitation is one where we invite another to create a power dynamic that we are familiar with and therefore we feel safe in. Yeah.
She was inviting the client to move to parent her and take care of her. And I can see that the roles here are reversed. Right? She did mention that she recognized that it's not the client's responsibility to take care of the therapist.
That's correct. And that's the ethical dimension. So as a therapist, if I'm anxious, I need to take care of it in personal work or supervision and not recruit the client into taking care of me.
However, in this case, what I observed was that the client responded as an adult.
He did. Yeah. So all our invitations may not be taken, but our role is to be watchful of extending these invitations in the first place.
That brings me to the unconscious process. I may not be aware that I am extending a symbiotic attention. I may be in my script.
Yeah. Which is what happened here. There are lots of unconscious process that we can now see, which is why personal work and supervision are necessary. Therapists.
Yeah. That became quite clear.
Excellent. Is this a good place to close?
Yes.
Thank you.
Thank you, folks.
Thank you.